It's the Dry Heat Check with Jayco and Espo. It's episode number 18, which we're going to give the nod to Tyson Nash, the former Arizona Coyote, now Coyotes broadcaster, wore the number 18, giving the nod to a Coyote.
Steve's brother, right? That's why he's famous?
Absolutely no relation to Steve Nash.
Then I don't care.
Well, I care. The fact that Tyson Nash has a jacket that has its own Twitter handle. As a member of the broadcasting career, and was one of those scrappy, fight hard type of hockey players, was a fan favorite in the short time he played, and now he might still be one of the more famous and popular Coyotes, even though he's not playing for the team.
Look, once the Coyotes moved to East LA, I found it difficult to continue to be a fan. So if it happened in the time they played at America West Arena, I know all about it. If it didn't, I don't know a lot about it.
Well, they might be moving back, and we're going to get to that later on the show.
I just kid. I actually have jumped back into watching the Coyotes this year now that I have my fall and spring and winters opened up now.
A little bit more open, especially in the evening
time. A little bit,
correct?
Yeah.
So other players, notable players that wore the number 18, and there aren't a ton of them, to be honest. 18 is kind of a sad number in the grand scheme of things.
Let's be honest. Most of these numbers have been pretty sad in the grand scheme of things.
They have. We'll start with the Suns. Curtis Perry, old-time son, Chucky Brown, and Hot Rod Williams.
Chucky Brown was part of the Barkley trade, I want to say.
I know Tim Perry.
Mark Bryant.
Jeff Hornacek.
The trade that sent Barkley to Houston.
Oh, got it. You know, I think you're right. Because in 1996, I think I saw when doing this research was when he came to the Suns. So I do think that's when.
Hot Rod Williams is the guy that they got for Dan Marley in their perpetual search for a center. And I still feel like
still
we're
to this day
in this perpetual search for a center. Hot Rod in his flat top.
I had love for Hot Rod Williams, but you think what you just mentioned, it creates a storyline in itself. Two guys that came in as a result of trades that Phoenix fans just never wanted to see happen.
Yep.
Dan Marley, Hot Rod Williams, Chucky Brown, Charles Barkley. Cardinals, and they're really 18 is full of a lot of practice squad training camp invitees. The only one of note that I felt like mentioning was Kerry Taylor, who had one really good game as a Cardinal, former Sun Devil, former Hamilton High product. So I wanted to give him the nod as a former 18.
Really, you giving a Arizona high school star some props? I never would have guessed that.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought? I never do such thing. Diamondbacks, Chad Tracy, Willie Bloomquist.
And Chad Tracy, the redhead.
Who came in at an important time when Connor Jackson, you know, was his career was in flux and not coming to fruition. They needed someone at first base, even though he was a third baseman. And he came in and played a pretty good first base there for a little while when the team really needed it.
And Chad Tracy had a very weird bobblehead, if I remember.
Is that right?
Just his positioning. This is the oddity that goes on in my brain.
I connect it
to just bizarre things, and that's one of those. I had quite the Diamondbacks bobblehead collection.
I think that's one of the only reasons why we have a show that's continued to this point, is because of the weird things that just come to the surface in your brain. Willie Bloomquist, as mentioned, another former Sun Devil, wore the number 18. And then Coyotes, we've got Micah Alitano. Now, I said that completely wrong.
No, I'm going to say you
Alitano,
said it right.
Something.
Whatever.
Sammy Lapisto, Dave Moss, and the current number 18 is Christian Dvorak, one of the young guys they're hoping that'll move up the chain. We've got a good show. And we've got some interesting things we want to bring up. The Cardinals will bring back the Nick Cage spectrum. They have a big game coming up against Minnesota. We mentioned the airing of grievances. That's going to be, we do each and every week, is going to be the Coyotes Arena related. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
I'm a little uncomfortable saying it's going to be a good show. We genuinely don't know, and it's been a little while since we've done one of these. So
you're right. This
mediocre
thing
is what I'm aiming for today.
I like how you're setting the bar low. We can only exceed expectations.
That's just how I do it in life.
Since you mentioned it has been a couple weeks since we did the show, and a large reason for that was because you've had changes come into your life. Let's talk about this. So since the last time we did a show, Espo, you have become a dad, and Donald Trump has become president. So I'm wondering, what is the crazier between the two? The fact that you're a dad or Donald Trump is the president?
Well, both
going to be the president.
Both create sleepless nights for people. I won't lie about that. But, you know, I got to be honest. This means my chance to be czar of Arizona sports and make Arizona sports great again actually has a chance. Actually, I may have already been elected and I missed it.
You didn't know.
In the 2 weeks since my daughter's been born. So I'm excited about that possibility because, as Kevin Garnett used to scream, anything is possible right now in this world.
There's no question. So getting back to the fact that you are now a dad to a beautiful little girl, I learned very quickly things about myself that maybe I didn't know or didn't have full confidence in prior to becoming a dad. So I'm wondering, give me a top three things that you've learned about yourself since becoming a dad.
One is that I still like SportsCenter, in particular the Scott Van Pelt edition, because before having a child, I used to spend time with my wife, didn't watch a lot of SportsCenter. Now that I'm up at all hours of the night and my wife's trying to get sleep and I'm trying to help take care of the baby, I'm back to watching some SportsCenter every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I actually like that, which I didn't think I would because I've seen every highlight on my phone.
It's funny you bring up Scott Van Pelt. I was just asked by someone I know, being in the sports industry, who are the national guys that you look up to or the ones that you like watching the most? And he was actually the first one I mentioned. His new show that he's brought back, the Late Night Sports Center, is probably the best version of Sports Center since the Dan Patrick, Kenny Mayne, those years. Yep. So I completely agree with you there.
And my daughter has more hair than Scott Van Pelt.
So yeah, which is an accomplishment.
I was disappointed because I was hoping she wouldn't. I could throw some glasses on her and she'd look like Scott Van Pelt, but that's not the case. Another thing I learned is Twitter isn't all that great once you have a kid.
No.
Because you just want to focus on your kid. I've disappeared from Twitter for the better part of a week and a half now, and I don't think the world is any worse off without me there, and I don't think I'm any worse off for not being there.
It's kind of a microcosm to the fact that a lot of the things that you focus so much attention on and thought was important just really isn't that important anymore.
Yeah, and you know what? I could sit there and I could go on rants on Twitter and yell at random people around town that just do a crappy job, but I decided I'd rather spend some time with the daughter. I'm sure I'll be back to Twitter at some point in the not-too-distant future and spouting dumb jokes about our beloved sports teams and holding people accountable for crappy content. But I'm not there right now. So that's one
let's
of the
let
things
I learned.
Let's
let you have a full night of sleep before you say something you might regret. You have one more?
I don't regret anything. I'm full.
No holds bar type of guy.
You know, everybody says it puts things into perspective and you think, well, that's BS. You know, things won't change. It'll all be the same. It'll just be another human being that I got to take care of. And it really does. It changes your mindset. And it gives me hope because we've talked about it. My wife's family is all Chicago fans, right? Mm-hmm. And
I don't think we've talked since the Cubs won the World
Series,
too.
Exactly, that's where I'm going.
So three crazy things have happened since our last show.
Days after my daughter was born, the Chicago Cubs come back from a 3-1 deficit and win the World Series, which taught me that maybe, just maybe, my daughter can be a lucky charm and we'll actually see a Suns or a Cardinals championship or even a Coyotes championship before I die, which I didn't think was possible before that. So it does change your perspective on things.
I'm surprised your wife didn't want to throw in a little wrinkle and rename your daughter Chris with a K.
Nope, not
after making the final out and hitting the big home run.
I might have accepted Wrigley, but I just to be
Wrigley
different.
Wrigley Esposito.
But,
you know, that kind of has that sounds like a news anchor right there. No question. So congrats.
Thank you very much.
You look the same. If in case you were wondering,
I don't.
Even though you might have changed inside, you look like the same happy-go-lucky guy you always have.
Nobody's ever accused me of being happy-go-lucky. I've gained a sizable amount of weight in the 2 weeks she's been here, and I look like a zombie. But I appreciate you lying to my face, sir.
I'd rather create a nice visual for those listening in right now. But hey, since you put it that way, I guess I'll leave it there.
An extra from The Walking Dead who they didn't get to finish his makeup.
Speaking of which, this has nothing to do with The Walking Dead, but are you watching Westworld?
I am not, because one of the other things I learned as I had a child was I have to cut down my bills, so I don't have HBO anymore, so I am not watching Westworld.
I'd get it back so you could watch Westworld. This show is amazing. It is so good. One of the better shows I've seen in a while. Let's switch gears to talk sports, though. Arizona Cardinals are 4-4-1, Greg.
Yep.
I'd like to, kind of rehash some things we discussed before we took a little bit of a 2-week break here. before the season started, you and I were both, you know, it's good to have a talk show when it's with two people that don't necessarily agree. But you and I were both kind of freaking out by all the preseason hype.
Yep.
Because you and I are born and raised here. We've been alive the entire duration. The franchise has been here. And anytime that there's been hype around any team, let alone the Cardinals, it's fallen flat on its face. So we were very cautiously entering this season that was full of hype. Sure enough, they got off to a slow start, and quite frankly, they still haven't looked great in any football game I've seen them play yet this season. However, they did come away with a win against the 49ers last week, and I think the thing that I've looked forward to the most each and every week with the Arizona Cardinals has been the Nicolas Cage spectrum. And so, one, I'd like to kind of rehash some of the highlights of the Nick Cage spectrum so people can get on the same page if they haven't tuned in a while. And I'm wondering where the 49ers game stacks up for you on the spectrum.
Look, I can't remember anything on the spectrum. I told you, I'm going on like 2 hours sleep. But the basic premise is we take a Cardinals game and we match it up to a movie that Nick Cage has done in the past, all right? So that's the simple premise
of it. The Buffalo Bills game was Wicker Man. That was a highlight for a lot of people. And then I compared the Jets game to A Family Man. So because of the fact that it was a good movie, not great movie, and it kind of helped us realize who the team was at its core, kind of like Nick Cage living in a false reality helped him learn who he was at his core. That was my comparison for the Jets game. You did one for the Panthers on Twitter, the Panthers loss, and now let's talk 49ers win.
The 49ers win was National Treasure's Book of Secrets, because you simply go, wait, we're still doing this crap? There's no reason to keep reliving this, all right? And that was the 49ers game, because you look at it and you go, okay, they didn't play well. Carson Palmer looked mediocre at times. Overall, they did not look like a team that came into the season with Super Bowl expectations. They almost lost to a team that's now 1-8. A team with a coach in Chip Kelly that likely won't be coaching in professional football next year. He'll probably be back in college football. A team that is playing Colin Kaepernick, who can't throw anymore and is more well-known this season for the fact that he's taking a knee during the national anthem than anything he's done on the field play-wise. Their running game has been mediocre even with Carlos Hyde, and you wind up almost losing this game. You blow a lead, you wind up coming down to the end and once again relying on your special teams to win it for you. This time they came through. That hadn't been the case all season. But overall, you gained no confidence in this team. Just like by watching National Treasure's Book of Secrets, you didn't go...
Is that the sequel? That's
the sequel.
Because they made like three of those, didn't
they? Well,
there's
a rumor there's going to be a third one.
Oh, okay. So that's what I heard.
But I sit there and I go, why are we still doing this? And you look at Nick Cage and in that point you go, why is he still doing these movies? Give us the good Nick Cage. Bring us back. Don't give us more of the same. The Cardinals need to find what made them special last year. They need to find it soon. Because I think this is a winner, a loser goes home kind of matchup this weekend.
Well, especially when you look at what's ahead. You know, I mean, a lot of people will say they're not technically out of it based on how jumbled up the NFC is if they lose this game in Minnesota. And I don't think anyone would fault them. I actually had this game as a loss before the season started. You know, new stadium, Minnesota's talented. You know, it was a pretty emotional loss for Minnesota in Glendale last year. So they're going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder. And that was before Minnesota had their injuries and the Cardinals have dealt with what they had. But when you look at the fact that Atlanta is a place that they never play well, and that's what's coming up the week after, and Atlanta is still playing good football, and they need to start compiling wins with the way the Saints have been playing and the Panthers are starting to come on. And then you look at the fact that you finished the season at Seattle and at LA, two teams that you didn't beat technically at home. So now you have to try to beat them on the road. Week 17 is always a weird proposition because you don't know if you're going to start everyone or what the scenarios are going to look like. So it's the type of thing where if you lose this game, you literally can't have anything go wrong, and you have to have teams help you in order to get into the playoffs. And even if you do get in the playoffs, remember, this was a Super Bowl or bust team.
All or nothing.
All or nothing. So if you even if you do get into the playoffs, you're looking at a low seed, all road games of extremely difficult road to get to the Super Bowl. And it's not a Super Bowl. It's a Super Bowl ring that everyone's taught, that Bruce Arians said. You're looking at a bust written all over it, which, you know, if you get into the playoffs, great. You create opportunity to make something of it, and anything can happen. But the fact of the matter is, at no point this season has this team looked good. They've looked fine or mediocre or bad. At no point have we looked at this Cardinal team and said, you know what, this is a good team. They just have some stuff they need to figure out.
Well, and the bottom line is they have to go 5-2 the rest of the way. I mean, that'll put them at 9-6-1.
At worst.
And I mean, that's the bottom that will get them into the playoffs is 9-6-1. All right? That's 5-2 the rest of the way. Do you have faith that this team can go 5-2 in their next seven games?
Not with what we've seen so
no.
far.
You've got the defense, which has played well. All right? They have shown up, and this team has relied heavily on that defense. Special teams has been a mixed bag, and Carson Palmer has been pitiful for most of this season.
Yeah.
He has just not found what made him special. Maybe it's the offensive line. Maybe it's the issues with the, you know, the wide receivers, Michael Floyd not really being there mentally, you know, John Brown's injury, whatever the case may be, he has not looked good, which makes me believe that he's not just going to magically find it again. He's at the tail end of his career. We've talked about it. He's just, it's not just going to magically come back all of a sudden. So now you're hoping, okay, the defense continues to play at a high level. The offense treads water and special teams doesn't screw up. Mm-hmm. That doesn't scream 5-2 to me.
That doesn't scream playoff or Super Bowl run either. It's kind of interesting and blasphemous for us to bring up the future right now because we have to be focused on this season. But if I told you halfway through the season that we would have to seriously consider for the upcoming offseason the solution at quarterback and make it a relatively immediate solution, and we need to find a new potential star body at wide receiver next season, would it have surprised you? Because quarterback was kind of the area where, you know what, this is Carson's job until he's done. You know, we're not going to get any better. Maybe it'd be good to get the next person waiting in the wings, but this is Carson's job until he's done. And then you look at the wide receiver position, and it was loaded. It was like, it's like, oh, we're going to have to cut guys in camp that are worthy of making an NFL roster just because we have such a stacked wide receiving core. But when I look at it, Fitzgerald has exceeded expectations this season, which has been fantastic, and they've needed it. But Floyd, bad. John Brown just does not look like the same guy that is playing
and
with.
There's health
that,
issues.
And there's obviously health issues. But even before that, John Brown kind of played with an ignorance that this is a small school, small town type of guy that has come into the NFL and seems to be unfazed. It seems like the lights have all of a sudden turned on for him, that he's realized what he's doing. J.J. Nelson does not have the skills. He has the speed, but not the skills to be an elite wide receiver in this league. And Jerron Brown, who I'm a huge fan of, tore his ACL. So it's like all of a sudden you're thinking about the long-term ramifications of the wide receiving core on this team, and it's kind of like, man, we sure need to find that next guy who can be the guy, maybe a first-round level guy, immediately.
Well, and the quarterback position doesn't surprise me. I mean, Carson Palmer got smacked in the mouth in that NFC Championship game. It's the kind of thing that sticks with a guy, especially towards the tail end of his career.
You called it the Jake Delhomme effect.
Yeah, we talked about it. We saw it with Jake Delhomme. The Cardinals did it to Jake Delhomme in the playoffs. He never recovered. I've said it since day one of this podcast when we talk Cardinals. That's what we're seeing with Carson Palmer. The biggest mistake was signing him to the extension, because now it's going to cost them a sizable amount if they want to walk away from Carson Palmer, and it's going to cost them a cap hit. Mm-hmm. That's not easy to do. If they hadn't signed him to the extension, it's an easy decision. You can move on. And there's guys. Tony Romo is likely going to be available. You know, a Jay Cutler, which makes you cringe,
gosh.
But there's going to be some names out there that could potentially be a stopgap between where we are now and whoever that guy of the future is that you draft or you acquire somehow. The problem is now the cap ramifications don't necessarily make sense with Carson's contract extension. So you may have to stick with Carson Palmer next year and hope all of a sudden he refines that magic. But the wide receiver thing totally catches you off guard because you think, well, Michael Floyd's going to have a contract year. He's going to step up big, and he may even price himself out of the Cardinals market going into the offseason.
Now he might be a steal in terms of the type of athleticism that he has.
Yeah, he did the polar opposite of what everybody thought. John Brown, it's an unfortunate situation right now, and you know, you look at it, there's been injuries, there's been guys that just haven't lived up to the hype. There's a lot of question marks for the future of this team. David Johnson is not one of them, though.
No.
That guy has the potential to be a star, but you have to build an offense around him, because what's happening right now is defenses don't have to worry about the pass too much. There's no real threats right now when it comes to the passing game. You're not getting those long balls that you were getting last year. So now they can cheat a little bit more on David Johnson. Now, has it worked real well? No, he's been good, but he could be great in an offense like last year where there's no way that you can cheat on the run.
No question. Let's switch gears and talk a little Suns basketball. I think it's been an intriguing start to the season. I don't know, with the baby coming in, how often you've been able to watch and the random start times that they've had playing on the East Coast a little bit or playing on the weekends. But I don't want to say I've sat here and watched every game, but I've watched a decent amount. And I find myself, for the first time in a long time, going out of my way to say the Suns are on tonight. I want to watch. Because, and I'll tell you why, it's not just because of the, you know, I want to see Devin Booker. It's not just because I want to see TJ Warren, who we've talked about it immensely about how big of a fans we are, and it's great to see it starting to come to fruition. And it's also not because there's an element of uncertainty with where the direction is going under Earl Watson. It's a style of play. I mean, I can't really pinpoint what their style is. If they're a run and gun, if they're a defense first, if they're in the half court, if they're a one-on-one, let's get it to our playmakers. All I know is they're making these games interesting and entertaining. And whether they're coming up with wins or losses, it really doesn't matter to me. It's an entertainment factor to where I'm finding myself saying on Sunday, last Sunday, that I want to get back home because this team played Golden State pretty well when they were in Phoenix. Even though they got blown out by Brooklyn the other night, and now they're going to supposedly the best roster in the NBA, they played Golden State pretty well. I think this could be an entertaining game, and it was worth it was worth the price of admission for me taking the time to watch for a little while until lost at the end.
Your wife charges you to come in the house.
She charges me to be able to turn the TV on to watch them, right?
That's impressive.
But point being is, I'm finding myself for the first time in a long time seeking out when the Suns are starting. And I know part of it is my job. I need to keep up with the Suns to know what I'm talking about, to have my storylines, to have my takes on things. And I'm still watching it with the reporter's eye, if you will. But I'm finding myself seeking out a little bit more than I was, especially over the last 2 or 3 years.
I agree. This is the most exciting Suns team we've had since that surprise 48-win team. There's a reason that you don't know what style they're playing, because they don't know what style they're playing. And I'm not convinced that there is a real offensive structure right now. There's some question marks, but they have been exciting. They have made games interesting, and that's a byproduct of the young talent on this roster. A guy like Eric Bledsoe getting his legs back under him. I'm interested. I'm intrigued to watch. What I was upset with over this first few weeks of the season was a lack of consistency in the minutes for the young guys at the beginning.
Yeah, and Chris is still only playing, even though he's starting, around 20 minutes.
Well, we're finally to a point where Dragan Bender isn't getting a did-not-play coach's decision, which was frustrating, because this isn't about winning games this year. And I understand it. The players want to win. Coaches want to win. But if coming into this, there wasn't a conversation with Earl Watson that 1A is preparing these young guys for the future and 1B is winning games, there was a failure in communication there, because this is all about getting these young guys ready.
Yeah.
Getting them prepared for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, when they actually can win games consistently, where they can compete to be a good team in the NBA. That's what this is about. Winning 30 games or 35 games this year does not matter. It's all the same. This isn't a playoff roster. And they can talk about it as much as they want. Oh, playoffs is our goal. Yeah, and being a millionaire is my goal. Being able to sleep more than 5 hours a night is my goal right now. Those things aren't happening at this moment. So you have to accept reality and do things that get the job done right now. The job is to get these young guys ready.
And Chris has gotten a lot more of the hype because he's been put into the starting role. He's had the Vine video dunks like we knew were going to be coming. There are things about Dragan Bender, though, when he has gotten on the floor that I've liked. And it's not the flashy stuff. It's not the stuff that's going to be written about by Paul Coro the next day. But, for example, I'm watching that Golden State Warriors game from Sunday in Golden State. And I can't remember which point guard it was. He drives baseline. He kicks it to Bender in the opposite corner, who had this just beautiful quick release three-pointer that was just drained. And I'm like, that is a scout's dream right there. That is an organization's dream. When you see basically everything that you hoped for when you drafted this guy was a fourth overall, you see it in a single play. It's not going to be the all-star numbers. It's not going to be the domination of a game. It's the intangibles at this point in his career where you look at it and you're like, if that's what we have already, man, we're really building at something. Because a quick release, the touch, the confidence to shoot it, those are things that you just can't teach. Those are things that are inherently learned and known to this point, and you just have to foster and grow. And I also saw him in a game earlier in the season where he was on the low block on the weak side, came across and doubled and blocked a shot. And it was actually a pretty athletic-looking play. So I know Marquese Chriss is getting a lot of the pub right now, and rightfully so. He's had some flashy plays. He had a nice game against Brooklyn the other night. He's hitting threes, which I don't think I think a lot of people expected. Oh, he can shoot threes. Okay, well, maybe that's something he can grow into. But I hope he's not shooting too many this season. I think there's been things with Dragan Bender that are kind of been brushed off to the side. But you're right. I think there is no reason why he shouldn't be a part of that first unit off the bench in the first half. And not coming in like the third quarter, maybe, because you weren't able to get him in the first half. I think that he needs to be a part of that unit that is in there in the second quarter or late in the first quarter. That's getting those guaranteed first half minutes. And then if you're trying to play for the win in the second half, okay. But at the same time, you have to have those guaranteed minutes to develop these guys, and you have to have it early in the game.
I think he might be the future of the center of the future for this team. A lot of people wanted to peg him as a small forward. I don't think he fits there. Ideally, he's probably a power forward, but you've got Marquese Chriss, and you knew you were creating this issue when you drafted both of them four picks apart.
And they're going to be comparing them against each other.
I think he may wind up being the guy that they turn to long-term as the answer at center. And play him and Chriss together with Warren at the three, Booker at the two, and Bled at the one. And I'd actually like to see that at some point this season when we get to a point where, okay, winning isn't actually going to happen.
Let's experiment.
Then let's experiment and figure out, could these lineups work? Because you're right, he does the little things very well. He's a smart basketball player. He has a high basketball IQ. And while there may not be flashy plays right now, and he may not do everything right on offense or at times on defense, he knows the game, and he's young. And I think once he catches up to the speed of the NBA, which could very well come in the second half of the season, it may not be a two-year process, I think he has the skill set to play multiple positions, and you could wind up slotting him in at the five for this team, because I don't think Alex Len is the long-term answer there. And Tyson Chandler obviously is on the downside of an illustrious career.
Before we switch gears off of the Suns, both of us though have been a little, I don't want to say perturbed, but just kind of taken back in a negative way about the performance of Brandon Knight so far. He obviously said all the right things. Earl Watson clearly handled the situation well with him coming off the bench, but he looks like a shell of himself on the court right now. And one thing that I've noticed is his shooting looks different. I mean, the elevation on his jump shot, whether it's from outside the perimeter or even from the mid-range, it looks like he's barely getting off the ground, and the shot is either short or lower than I remember seeing in the past. It just, he looks like a different player, and you just can't help but wonder if this is because in the back of his mind he is still pissed that he is coming off the bench.
He feels disengaged, and he always struck me as a guy with an immense amount of talent in basketball, but maybe that really wasn't what his passion was, and he just did it because he was super talented at it, and that's what you do. Sometimes you get pushed in life into places where you don't necessarily fit, but you do it because you do have a skill set to be able to do it. You're all right at it. You're good at it even.
You hear about it all the time.
You know, and I feel like that might be where he is, and when it doesn't go exactly the way he wants it, he becomes slightly disengaged, and that's what I'm feeling here. I mean, it just, he doesn't, never, I mean, he made it clear. He didn't want to be a sixth man. He wanted to be a starting guard for a team, and coming off the bench was never something he wanted to do. Now, Earl Watson is extremely impressive in his ability to sell guys. He could sell, you know, popsicles to Eskimos in the middle of the winter in Alaska.
Ketchup, right? Popsicle.
Whatever you want. He could pull that off. He's that good at talking to people. And I feel like that's what he did with Brandon Knight. He sold him on this idea, and then the reality wasn't as appealing to Brandon Knight as it was. And now we're hearing, rumblings of Suns are testing the market to potentially trade Brandon Knight. What is there out there that they could get? They're going to sell low. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the bottom line. They're not going to recoup high first-round pick like they gave up for him, which was that Lakers pick that they got in the Steve Nash deal. They're not going to recoup that. Maybe they get a lower first-round pick. Maybe they get another guy that's much like Brandon Knight that isn't quite, living up to his potential in another city, and it's you hope a change of scenery helps this guy, and it's at a position that isn't guard, because you're log jam there.
Or at least point guard.
Point guard, maybe it's a backup off guard guy that you hope can rejuvenate things, and then that team hopes Brandon Knight can do the same. But we've seen, other teams already do this with Brandon Knight. Two other teams in Detroit and Milwaukee get to a point where they go, the guy's got talent, but we don't want him here.
And he's not our long-term solution.
Yeah, I think we're getting to that point in Phoenix, and when you've already seen it happen three other times and you've seen the results, the Suns aren't going to get the kind of return that both Detroit and Milwaukee got for Brandon Knight. Because people are going to catch on. A few times something happens, all right. Three times, it starts to become a pattern, and there's an issue there.
Yeah, no question about it. This is the Dry Heat Check with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito. It's episode Tyson Nash. Before we go, the airing of grievances, Espo. The Arizona Coyotes announced that they're looking to move to Tempe, and they're look to be partnering with ASU. Your thoughts around this situation in your airing of grievance.
Look, I'm trying to be a kinder, gentler man because I'm a father now. I have a daughter. You've got to think about these things.
You do. Your life is very important right now.
But honestly, I look at the state of Arizona sports right now, Coyotes included, and I feel like we're in a bad HGTV Love It or List It episode, all right? I feel like everybody is looking at their venues going, well, if we spruce it up a little bit, do I want to love it or do I want to list it and try to go to this brand new place that I could go live? Right now, the Cardinals, and we never would have guessed this about a decade and a half ago, are the only ones going, yeah, we love our digs. You put a little fresh coat of paint there, maybe move the furniture around. This place is perfect. Everybody else is going, let's list this bad boy because there's plumbing issues. I don't care how much you rearrange this or if you try to give me an extra room or you redesign the whole thing. It's just outdated. It doesn't feel right. And we're going to go move to this high rent. We got a bigger budget. We can go move to this. My big problem with all of this is the fact that each and every one of these teams is going to try to do it on the taxpayer's dime.
And it's not going to work for any of them.
Well, it may work for the Suns because they're the only ones that have a legitimate claim. Their building is about to be 25 years old. They've done everything that they can in terms of renovating. and they've gone through this process already, they're the only ones that maybe have a leg to stand on. The Diamondbacks don't with Chase Field. They need improvements in the current facility, but they don't deserve a new building. The Coyotes are playing in one of the NHL's better arenas. They just don't like where it's located. And you know who's to blame for that? Elman, who used to own the team, that decided putting it in East LA was a great idea. All right? There's no reason that taxpayers should be on the hook for this. And if you look at that announcement on Monday, you got to question, what are the chances here? All right? Because it was just the Coyotes sitting there talking about this. ASU wasn't there.
Apparently, it didn't work out. From a scheduling standpoint.
The athletic department over at ASU said it comes down to, can the Coyotes get the financing for this? I mean, they flat out said it. They weren't at the press conference. City of Tempe wasn't at the press conference. Apparently, they didn't even know about it that they were having this. Doug Ducey, the governor of the state of Arizona, wasn't there. The only politician willing to talk about it is Mayor Greg Stanton in Phoenix, and that's because he's saying this is a ridiculous idea, and the only thing that makes sense is one venue shared by the Coyotes and the Suns. Right now, we're looking at the Suns wanting a new downtown arena. The Coyotes are talking Tempe. There's a group saying that they're going to build a first-class arena up in Scottsdale off the 101 near Salt River Field and Talking Stick Resort. Why all of a sudden are we going to have four venues in this city for what really are two teams, and none of this makes sense? And it's all going to come at the taxpayers' dime. The only thing that makes sense is Robert Sarver sucking it up and saying, you know what, we'll work with the Coyotes, we'll share a venue, because this is the only legitimate path to getting a new venue downtown. It's the only way the Coyotes probably get or should get a new venue is sharing it downtown with the Suns. The city of Glendale is a bunch of idiots because they basically screwed themselves in this entire situation and kicked the one tenant that they're ever going to have in that arena out in the Coyotes. And I don't see how the city of Tempe and the state of Arizona is going to create another tax district to try to build a building. I would love it. The Coyotes should be in the East Valley. They should have been in the Los Arcos area a decade ago when they built their new arena. That was where it should have been. And they should have figured out how to make it work there. They never should have turned to the West Valley. But you can't put that genie back in the bottle now. And I just don't see how we're feasibly going to fund a downtown stadium and one in Tempe. I just don't see how it's going to happen and how you're going to get the political support. And that's before we even look at the Diamondbacks, who somehow either want a lot of money to fix Chase Field or are threatening to leave and ask for a new venue. None of this makes sense right now.
And you know what the underlining theme with around all these teams are? Playoff droughts.
Yeah.
And lack of success on the field, lack of success in games. It's one of those things where it's, you know, you talked about how you didn't want necessarily the Cleveland Indians to win the World Series because all of a sudden Phoenix becomes the new Cleveland. And it, technically it still could be the new Cleveland because the Cavs still did win the finals. How could you be asking so much of this from your community when the result hasn't been for the community at the end of the day in so long? It's just one of those things where, you know, I'll reference the group text. They love when I do it. I'll reference. And one thing was brought up. The fact that the Coyotes could be on their third venue in 20 years, that's also just incredibly insane as well. How could you have taxpayers be involved in coming up with money for a team that has had very minimal success, has went to the Western Finals once, has been bankrupt and had to have the NHL basically let it survive long enough to where new ownership could come in. And now all of a sudden you want taxpayers to pay for your new venue.
And like, they're still losing.
It seems asinine to even ask the community for something like that.
And they're still losing. I think it's still $25 million a year. Like they're still losing large amounts of money. And now it's, well, if we can get this arena, we can get back to the break-even point. So you want the government to subsidize you making money in sports. That's what this is coming down to. And for it's probably very much the same for the Diamondbacks, because we've heard about financial issues that, in all fairness, Jerry Colangelo did nothing to help them with. He put them in a large hole that they had to figure out. And when it comes to Robert Sarver, it's, you know, it's a team that is making money but can make more in a new building. Why are the taxpayers on the hook for all this? Now, everybody knows I love sports. I want to see a new venue for the Suns, and if the Coyotes can be a part of it, great. I'm just, as I get older, I'm starting to not understand how subsidizing this stuff with taxpayer money without any kind of guarantees, you know, the city of Glendale, as much as they screwed themselves in all this, are going to be left holding the bag. They got absolutely no guarantee. The Coyotes could simply, part of this is because of lease negotiations that happened, but they can simply go, we're leaving for another venue, or we're going to leave for another city. There needs to be guarantees when money's put into this. If Tempe does pony up the money for this arena, there damn well better be a guarantee that the Coyotes aren't going to pull up and leave 5 years from now because they're not making money, or they don't like this, or they don't like that,
because
or they
don't
sell
like
to
something the mayor said.
Yeah, or this ownership group decides to sell to a Canadian ownership group who wants to take them to Quebec. Whatever the case may be, at some point there needs to be protections if state and governmental money is going to be spent on these teams. And I am getting sick of threats. And we haven't hit that point here, but I think we're going to get to that point with some of these teams, that there's going to be threats made. And I don't want to be held hostage. Because millionaires and billionaires getting subsidies on the backs of all of us who are working, or people who are coming to stay in the state in hotels because of these special tax districts, when that money could go to, I don't know, education in the state where we rank 48th, There's a lot of question marks that need to be answered before we simply give the Coyotes a new venue, which I would love to see them in the East Valley again, or the Diamondbacks or the Suns for that matter.
That's why he's running on the platform of Make Arizona Sports Great Again. That's Greg Esposito. Vote for Espo in 2020. Or how about right now? Let's just open up a new ballot.
I didn't know we had to wait until 2020 for the czar of Arizona sports. I'm pretty
Hopefully
sure.
Hopefully we don't have to wait that long.
We can vote whenever we want.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been the Dry Heat Check episode, Tyson Nash.